for me personally, I had experiences in Gaza, which we were being shot from this tunnel entrance 5 meters away from us, and we haven't seen it. Just up until he took out his AK and he started shooting, those threats are 360 pretty much.
The open threat to destroyer.
My name is Major Libby Weiss, and you're listening to Mission Brief, the official IDF podcast, where we take you behind the scenes, introducing you to the soldiers and officers defending the people of Israel. In this episode, we're going to take you into Gaza, where IDF soldiers are fighting in complex, close-quarter urban combat. We wanted to bring you a story straight from the front lines, the story of R, a soldier in the Lotar unit.
My name is Staff Sergeant R. I'm serving in the Lotar unit. It's a special forces unit which specializes in intervention when it comes to hostage rescue, civilian environment terror attacks, special shooting courses. And the other section is instructing the whole military, preparing all units for those very specific scenarios and maintaining a quick reaction force in case some terror attack happens in a civilian environment and head over to the place.
The Lotar unit's training is both physical and psychological, and focuses on improving their tactics, endurance, and instincts in battle.
What we go through is usually the most basic shooting courses, and then you move up until those hostage scenario courses or civilian environment shooting courses. So you can have this ability to shift and realize who's armed, who's not, and who might be a terrorist, but if he surrenders, then you're not allowed to shoot. So you need to be very cautious and need to be able to think at the same time that you're taking those very drastic decisions. So yeah, keeping yourself very sharp and concentrated. And then it comes into action when you go down to the field or the range or the shooting, the room clearing course.
Lotar soldiers are world experts in the field of counterterrorism. Following IDF combat training, they continue to train in complex combat scenarios and specialize and prepare for any counterterrorism mission they might face. Let's hear from Staff Sergeant R.
Counterterror warfare could go down from the most basic contact from the other room. You can get shot from 5 or 6 meters. You can actually see it in the videos from the war. And it goes up until being shot from different angles, different height varieties, from different buildings at the same time.
Staff Sergeant R and his team have been fighting nonstop for days on end in Gaza, conducting special operations and facing a variety of threats, from terrorist operatives to rigged tunnel shafts. Let's hear about his personal experience fighting in Gaza.
For me personally, I had experiences in Gaza, which we were being shot from this tunnel entrance 5 meters away from us, and we haven't seen it. Just up until he took out his AK and he started shooting, those threats are 360 pretty much. So you need to be able to move all the time forward, but then at the same time you need to maintain defense behind you, to the right or left of you, and at the same time being able to execute offensive operations so you can eliminate the targets. Plus you have a lot of IEDs, a lot of booby traps inside those buildings, so you need to be very careful, take things very slowly so you can keep the security of the force at the highest priority, but at the same time being able to advance and move and conduct your operation safely.
This type of combat is very complicated and intense. R and his team may face many challenges, and these could be above and below the ground. For example, in terror compounds in urban areas and in tunnels deep under the surface of the Gaza Strip.
So the main challenge in urban warfare, usually it's the threats. They are not only in front of you, they can be behind you, above you, and below you. The Hamas terrorists are actually living among all those civilians. They usually grow in those places in Gaza, and it's very hard to tell which one is a civilian and which one is a Hamas member, because usually they dress up just like normal civilians, they look like normal civilians, until they pull out a rifle or a pistol or a grenade, and then it makes them a terrorist. So for us, those decisions are very hard to take when it comes to the moment of truth. Besides that, it's never a smooth, flat terrain. It's always a lot of bricks, traps, metal on the ground. And you need to watch where you're going at all times, but being able to look forward and see what's in front of you and not focus on the ground, because if you'll focus on the ground, you'll never see what's coming until it's up in front of you. besides that, you have the traps, you have a lot of IEDs, you have a lot of wires, a lot of electrics that you can't really know if it's connected to a trap or a bomb, but you need to stay calm and realize that you still have a mission and execute it at the highest ability.
The war against Hamas has been ongoing for the last 4 months and has received extensive news coverage in the media. However, it can be easy to forget the catalyst for this war, and particularly the fact that Israel and the IDF were forced into it.
The IDF fights in urban warfare, one, because we were actually forced to. We never really wanted to get into urban environment. Gaza itself has its own city underground built by Hamas. They didn't really ask any civilian or any government agency to have those permissions. They just built it by themselves. What it means for us, it means another threat, another dimension that we need to face and take into our hands as something that can threaten us. It puts our forces in a high threat. It puts the civilians in high threat. It makes eliminating Hamas much more complicated because you have civilians involved. And when we have civilians involved, we cannot take any extreme actions because we need to keep the safety of the IDF and both the Gazan civilians.
One can only imagine the complexity in fighting in an urban environment. Since Hamas terrorists intentionally embed themselves in Gaza's civilian population and infrastructure, differentiating between civilians and terrorists and eliminating only the terrorists can be a complex task. And that's exactly why Hamas hides amongst its civilians.
Hamas usually has the most basic advantage is they have civilians that they control and they use them as human shields. They prevent them from evacuating themselves south or north when we order them. And they usually just force them to blend in and stay around the area that we're operating in to make our work harder and make ourselves much more vulnerable because we have those kind of human thoughts that we cannot just shoot anyone we see.
Our tactics in urban warfare are worlds apart from Hamas. While our forces put an emphasis on minimizing harm to uninvolved civilians and taking extra care when fighting in densely populated areas, Hamas terrorists do the exact opposite. We saw this on October 7th as Hamas killed and tortured innocent civilians and took more than 200 people hostage, including men, women, and children, and the elderly.
For them, it's easier because it's their own environment. They don't really care about anything besides killing us. They don't really care about any civilians involved. They don't care about their own people because their whole agenda and main goal is to kill us. And so for them, protecting themselves means at any cost they can use their own civilians, our civilians, the ones they kidnapped.
We asked Sergeant R to share an experience from one of the operations he was a part of in Gaza.
I had fought in Beit Hanun. It's a very northeastern city in Gaza. In those neighborhoods, you have a lot of civilians. And it's a very complex and squeezed-in places, such as the Kasbah of Beit Hanun. It doesn't matter to them how many will die during the process. It doesn't matter to them how many innocent people will die, and it makes our job much harder because we need to accomplish our goal.
When the IDF decided to launch ground operations in Gaza, it didn't happen overnight. The operations were planned out. In collaboration with intelligence teams, each force was instructed exactly where to go and how to operate. Protocols were set up for every unit before being sent out for their operation.
We have a lot of different protocols for each and every kind of scenario that we can shift our minds into. Our main goal is to minimize the damage as much as we can, even if it means that we will get shot at one point. Our base assumption is that some of the guys will get hurt, some of the team members will get shot, but it's in the price of returning the situation backwards and saving as many civilians as we can. So for us, there's no doubt about it. When entering this kind of civilians environment, when entering this kind of a scenario, we have more of a selective kind of shooting way when it comes to those situations to prevent ourselves from shooting any civilians.
What many listeners are interested to hear is how these protocols come into action in real time.
So when the tactical pause came into action, that was on Friday morning, 15 minutes into this tactical pause, my team goes out. There's a report that an armed man is running around the place, so we need to find out if he's a terrorist or not. So 15 minutes into this, we realize there's a report of a terrorist running around us, trying to create this kind of a firefight going. So half of the team goes out to scan, and my team goes out as well to pull security in the inner perimeter. And then the guy next to me says, "R, I see a face." And then I look to the right of me and I see 100 meters away, this kind of head pops up, and then he hides back. And then I start moving over this location where I saw this guy, and then I see his head pops up again and hiding. Once again, it happens two or three times, and then we advance like 70 meters, we hold, we pull security, and then we start seeing a lot of those military-age civilians coming out with their hands up, trying to play with us, trying to find out if they can pull, how much they can pull until something happens. And for us, for me personally, I wasn't able to fire because there's a tactical pause. Second of all, they weren't armed. But for me, what I was fearing the most is that from this angle that we hadn't been covering, someone would pull out a rifle and shoot at us. So it was this like very complex scenario that we're dealing with those civilians, and at the same time, we need to realize how to solve it out so no one would get shot if we're paying attention to the civilians.
The situation Sergeant R is describing is the reality for many soldiers fighting in Gaza during this ongoing war against Hamas. Mitigating harm to civilians is one of the IDF's highest priorities, sometimes even at the cost of a soldier being killed. R shares how he deals with such difficult situations and what goes on through his head during these times.
First of all, I need to be very concentrated. Second of all, I have those principles, those like guiding principles of urban warfare. One is to maintain the security of the force. Second of all is to push correctly, so we can push the terrorists from the nearest room up to the furthest one. Third one is having this mutual coverage between squads, that when one squad advances, the second one is static and they can provide cover for them. So in case something breaks out, the static squad will cover for them. And the fourth one is isolating the area. So you can deal with one area at a time, so you wouldn't have a lot of firefights going on. And then the team members and the team leader will be able to solve the problem one at a time. So it wouldn't get him into those kind of complicated scenarios where he has two ongoing firefights and there's a lot of chaos going on. Second of all, being very slow, being very precise about every kind of action I take, so that I wouldn't be able to, that I wouldn't enter into some kind of trapped room, step on a bomb, step on a landmine.
These are extreme situations that the average person will never face in their lifetime. Being calculated, focused, and precise about every action and following the protocols are how soldiers like Sergeant R and his team survive on the battlefield. On the morning of October 7th, when Hamas terrorists invaded southern Israel, brutally massacred over 1,000 innocent civilians and kidnapped over 200 to Gaza and tortured and shot others, Sergeant R and his team were immediately dispatched to base, picked up their gear, and drove to the kibbutzim in southern Israel that were under attack.
7 a.m. in the morning, I wake up from this alarm that goes off, like rocket's alarm. I go into the shelter, I go back, and then I see the footage on the TV, and then I realize that the first team, which was in the base already on QRF standby, they already got to Sderot. They were the first team in the entirety of the Special Forces community to arrive into a civilian environment and react. At that time, I got to the unit. My team were getting ready. We got our snipers, our breachers, the K9 handlers from Okits unit, and then we drove down south as fast as we could. At the same time, we have a lot of reservists who came back to the unit. They had to do all the paperwork to get back in the military again, get armed, and then they joined us south.
This isn't just our story. Thousands of reservists left their homes on the morning of October 7th to defend the State of Israel.
I go to Nachal Oz outpost. We picked up the snipers from there, and we moved over to an outpost, which was held by Golani Brigade soldiers. We had a report that there were in between 5 to 7 Golani Brigade soldiers hiding inside this outpost. So two of our teams, me and the other team, got to the outpost. We cleared it out from terrorists in something like 15, 20 minutes. And then we started looking for all the survivors. So from 5 to 7, it came up to 17 Golani Brigade soldiers we rescued. And at the same time, trying to find out, realize if there's any more terrorists around, trying to hide or create some kind of ambush, set up an ambush for us.
These tragic stories serve as a reminder of the brutal enemy we face. The ground operations that followed the attack of October 7th allowed the IDF to better understand the requirements of urban warfare, including the decision-making process and combat methods used by our enemy.
Urban warfare, you need to be precise and very sharp in every kind of step and every kind of decision you take, because you need to consider every kind of civilian involved or any kind of people who are not, who don't have anything to do with the conflict that's going on. And when it comes to open field, you usually don't have a lot of people involved besides your enemies, so you can take much more extreme actions and decisions, and they will not harm anyone besides the terrorists that we're facing. So you can use much larger ammunition, much larger explosives, much more large scale and number infantry tactics. And when it comes to urban warfare, you need to move slowly. You need to consider every step you take into a room, because every step might be your last. So everything when it comes to urban warfare is slower.
Another layer of complexity on the battlefield are our hostages who are currently being held in Gaza. As of this recording, over 130 civilians are still being held captive by Hamas in the Gaza Strip. Their presence in the combat zone has an impact on the methods we might use during combat.
If you have civilians inside, any kind of hostages involved inside, we have our own special tactics that we cannot share here. But in case something like this pops up, we do get in and we do deal with the tunnel, but usually we get some kind of ID expert to investigate if it's trapped, the entrance is trapped. We investigate what's going on inside using cameras or drones, and then we pull out from the place and we blow it up later on.
Before we ended the interview with Sergeant R, we asked him how his team and his LOTAR unit as a whole are preparing for future operational scenarios. The enemy is becoming smarter and continues to develop technology, ammunition, and tactics. How does Sergeant R and his team stay one step ahead of the game?
So, as you can see, the world always changes. Every day there's a new threat, there's a new tactic, there's a new enemy coming up with these new ideas of bombing people or just doing mass shooting and slaughtering a lot of innocent people. So for us, it means changing the courses all the time. It means even taking the readiness into a higher level. So our forces can always believe in the threat. They can believe it also, it can always happen at all times. And at the same time, creating those complicated places where the soldier must think outside of the box, so he wouldn't be very robotic when something breaks out. So for us, it's preparing the soldier for thinking and kind of adapting into those scenarios at the same time, keeping those basic skills at the highest level.
Well, folks, this has been another episode of Mission Brief. I want to thank Sergeant R for taking the time to speak with me. We know that he's really, really busy. And I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen to this podcast wherever you may be. Like, share, and subscribe for more episodes.
The open threat to destroy us.